This is Jim Engstirth. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and stepping into the guest chair is Jim Brown, former Louisiana Secretary of State, 1980 to 1988, and he was insurance commissioner, elected three times to that position. And he is here to talk about a few different matters. And by the way, there is an election 8 months from today, and it's rather quiet out there. And
there is. I didn't hear much about it. I don't think anybody else in the state has, Jim.
Well, when you ran for governor in 1987, you probably ran for a couple of years, didn't you?
At this stage, and we're here in February, which is, what, 6-7 months before you qualify, gosh, I was organizing and hired some staff to help me, and I know my colleagues that ran, Billy Tozan, for example. Billy, we were all friends back at that time, Edwin Edwards, Billy Tozan, Bob Livingston, Buddy Romer. We'd all worked together on a number of projects. Romer and I were in the Constitution Convention. We're very close friends. But so we knew what everybody was doing, and every single candidate had a pretty good organization, was starting to do a lot of retail activity of traveling throughout the state. There's some of that going on, but for a variety of reasons, it's not nearly as intense as it was 30 years ago.
And in 87, it wasn't just you and Tozan. It was Romer. It was Bob Livingston, Edwin Edwards. So you were all in the race at the same time. Even Speedy Long was out there on the hustings.
Butch Baum, insurance.
That's right. He died June 3rd.
Very wealthy fella. Flew his own plane. And so there was a lot of activity going on. Now, Jim, I guess I'd say this. The candidates have not upped the level, but it's a little different time today than it was then. Retail politics was so prevalent then. You didn't have social media. You didn't have the tools to get to voters individually like you do today. And so if you're really going to get your name known, you didn't miss a parade. You didn't miss a fair or festival. That was just an imperative way to campaign, to let people see you. People would come out to those events. You could talk to them and get to know them and build your base. Today, I think some consultants are saying, well, we can go and blitz you with social media on your Facebook page or some other way in the last few months of the campaign, and that's going to make it a lot easier for candidates. If you have the money to spend, that's how so many candidates are going today.
Well, in 1987, the year in which there were five major candidates for governor, really six before Butch Baum died in that plane crash, you had Fox McKithen and Mike Cutshaw, who were running for Secretary of State.
Correct.
You had Bobby Freeman and Paul Hardy, who were running for Lieutenant Governor. I think Billy Gust that year was challenged by Harry Connick Sr.
All incumbents in office who had major challenges.
That's right.
Out there.
And then there were other races that were quite competitive as well. Every one on the ballot was one that Treasurer. Remember, that was Mary Landrieu and Kevin Riley and Tom Burbank and Buddy Leach. They were all in the race for treasurer. And these races now are very, very quiet, not just the governor's election, but the others. But I do see there's a guy named Tim Teeple who's raised $838,000 for an insurance commissioner race against Jim Donilon. Interestingly, Temple, who's a Republican, his political consultant is Scott Wilfong, who is on this show. And Scott Wilfong used to be a consultant for Jim Donilon, who is the incumbent. And Wilfong just sent out a message this morning saying, for too long, Louisiana suffered under the highest insurance rates in the nation thanks to inexperienced career politicians who catered to special interests while ignoring the people in the industry.
Well, that's always the way you take on a challenger. That right now, Jim, is shaping up to be the only really major race outside of the governor's race, as you said. Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, going down to the Attorney General Jeff Landry, Mike Strain, the Agriculture Commissioner, they're all going to have some opposition. You never get away scot-free. You know, I say that. I did in 1985 when I was Secretary of State. But outside of an abnormal situation like that, major officials are going to have competition. But there doesn't seem to be, like you've talked about in the past, some degree comes down to party. The state of Louisiana has become so Republican, and the Republican Party, by and large, supports incumbents. And so as a consequence, you mentioned 1987. I'm not sure what Kevin Riley was, what his registration was, and these other candidates. It didn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. You voted for the person. The personality was the driving force behind the campaign. But not, mm-hmm. not today. We're a Republican state on a statewide basis. And if you're a Republican incumbent, unless you've gotten into trouble like all the candidates seem to be in Virginia, then you're pretty much locked into the endorsement from the party. It's very hard to run against an incumbent Republican in this state. The exception is that Tim Temple is a Republican, and he's running against incumbent Donlin, and there's an issue there. Insurance, and I know this having been insurance commissioner, Jim, insurance touches every single person in the state. So when you're paying high insurance rates, you're plugged in. Most of us don't care who the agriculture commissioner is or the lieutenant governor. You could do away with those offices. It wouldn't. But insurance touches every single person. And with the highest rates in the country, Donald's in the fight of his life, quite frankly. Temple's going to be a very effective candidate in that race.
All right, 877-217-5757. We're going to cover some ground locally, nationally, and in the state with Jim Brown, who's been around the block for a long time, first elected to statewide office in the year of 1979. That's 40 years ago, Jim Brown.
Statewide office, good gosh, 40 years. And it just seems like yesterday, Jim. So time flies rapidly. And then before that, 8 years as secretary, or there is in, state senator.
Yeah.
And so you think you gained some knowledge and some perspective. But that's the interesting thing about life in a democracy in America today, because of the Trump effect, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, it's a whole different level playing field than when I ran some 40 years ago.
Now, the governor, who is a Democrat and the only Democrat standing in statewide office, he said on his monthly radio program that he was courted at very high levels. I think that means the president of the United States asked him to switch parties. But he said no. And it would have seemed to have been an easy race for him, unlike Buddy Romer, who made a mistake by switching. For John Bel Edwards, if he had switched to the Republican Party, I think he would have won going away. But he may win going away anyway. But why did he not switch?
Well, he was a state representative and a dug-in Democrat. I think he was pretty firm in terms of his beliefs. He's been very consistent in saying, look, I'm going to stand on my principles. He's always been a Democrat. And I don't see John Bel Edwards as an opportunist. I think some of these folks that switched in the past saw the writing on the wall and, hey, the people are moving in the street and I'm their leader. I better get out front of them, you know. So, and the other thing I think John Bel Edwards realizes is he's about as I don't want to use the word conservative, but he when you look at the issues he's on gun control, on abortion, on so many issues, they're basically pretty strong Republican issues. So if you have to have a Democrat who can run in a conservative state, you can't do much better than John Bel Edwards. I think he knows that. You bring in incumbency. I'm not having personal knowledge, but I've seen the reports of some major Republicans like Joe Cannizzaro and Boise Bollinger and the big money people in the Republican Party all supporting John Bel Edwards. So I think he feels with all that in his background and behalf, and maybe having some potential interest in a higher office, he's decided to rerun as a Democrat. It's going to be a fight, though, for him. It's not going to be nearly as easy as you said if he would have switched parties. He would have been easily elected then.
Well, 15 years ago, both of our U.S. senators were Democrats, Bill Cassidy and John Neely Kennedy. In fact, Kennedy, 15 years ago, supported John Kerry for president, Jim Brown, against George Bush. And now he's Mr. Conservative. He must have had an epiphany.
He woke up and saw the light, huh? He counted the numbers. And look, I understand that we can, you know, there's so many issues in this country today on have you changed your position because you matured. Obviously, the best example is the whole blackface controversy up in Virginia right now, where the governor says, don't hold me to a mistake I made 30 years ago. And so the Kennedy and
actually, he says he didn't do it now, but except when he was mimicking Michael Jackson, but
maybe like Kavanaugh, he had a few brews and wasn't sure. So, but in any event, I mean, there is some genuine change of position. As I've gotten older, I've become a little bit more conservative, I guess, if you will, in terms of some things I used to push. So, but again, there's opportunism in the mix also, quite frankly.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll return with Jim Brown after this brief timeout for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Jim Brown, longtime Louisiana Politico, is with us. 877-217-5757. You can count on one hand the number of people elected five times to statewide office in Louisiana. And Jim Brown accomplished that in his career. He did lose once when he ran for governor in the year of 1987 in a race that included a list of heavyweights in Billy Tozan and Buddy Romer, Bob Livingston, Edwin Edwards, and Jim Brown. They were all in that race. Now, we have a race in 8 months, and Jim Brown's been commenting about that. And you ran as a Democrat, and many of those Democrats from 1987 are now Republicans, including Buddy Romer, including Billy Tozan.
That's right. I think everyone is except Edwin Edwards.
And you told me just a moment ago, I'm shocked that you have switched parties.
And I'm not in the public eye anymore, but about a year ago, I just felt like I was extremely uncomfortable with the direction the Republicans were heading and the direction the Democrats were heading. And by the way, the fastest growing group in the state of Louisiana are independents. I always felt that if someone really was able to raise a little money and actually form the Louisiana Independent Party, there'd be a lot of support for something like that with candidates actually running on such a ticket. So far, that's not really gelled, but I think it's something that could take place in the future, Jim.
All right, 877-217-5757. A listener notes that Pat Bergeron and Bill Bryan have formed this Independent Party.
They have. There's not been much movement. No. It's going to take, to really organize, it's going to take an effort, someone to raise about $500,000 and get some people on the ground. And I know they formed the party, but as far as it really attracting many voters, it's still got a ways to go, and it's just going to take some dollars and a lot of hard work to do that.
Now, you write a column, Jim Brown does, that appears in many statewide newspapers, and the latest, Gestapo Tactics in America, ? It reads, it sounds like it came out of a movie plot. In the early morning hours, federal agents stormed a home to make an arrest. They had to be after some major drug lord or a sought-after terrorist. There were 29 agents wearing military gear, carrying weapons. High-powered assault rifles were involved. 17 SUVs, two armored vehicles surrounded the home with lights flashing and sirens blaring. Must have been a really dangerous dude. In a nearby canal, amphibious warcraft charged the home filled with more federal agents. A federal helicopter hovered in the sky with long-range weapons focused on the home. As agents approached the house with battering rams, they demanded that the accused immediately open the door and surrender. Who was the accused?
It was this kind of off-the-wall political hack, if you will, named Roger Stone, some Trump operative who doesn't amount to much, who was called before Congress and apparently made some false statements to Congress. And so there were more agents that went after him and attacked his home than there were that got Osama bin Laden. And I guess the point is, and I could care less about Stone. If he's guilty, he's guilty. But that's not how you're supposed to act in America today. We've gotten so divided, number one, and there's been such an overreach in terms of the FBI, the Justice Department, this fellow Mueller, the special prosecutor, and maybe there's something to what he's doing. But there's a way you deal with this with constitutional protections or supposed constitutional protections under the Fourth Amendment and other constitutional amendments. And this is just complete overkill. Some people said, well, he might destroy documents. His lawyers had told the prosecutors, if you're going to arrest him, he'll report in. People knew he was under investigation. If he was going to destroy documents, he would have done so a long time ago. So it just leaves a very bad taste of someone that's concerned about having a democracy mm-hmm. and protecting an individual's rights. You're innocent until proven guilty, and I thought it was just a real distasteful event that took place, Jim. I usually write about Louisiana events, and I'm doing so this week, by the way. Going to do a column later on today about blackface, by the way, in Louisiana. But in this instance, I was just so appalled at how Mueller and his staff acted like jackboots and came in like Gestapo people. It just was completely out of range, and so that's why I wrote about it.
Well, last week on this show, Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana called in and noted that on page 90 of John McGinnis's book is Pepe Bruno in blackface and also with a Klan hat on the floor of the House of Representatives. Pepe Bruno is still in office as a member of the Ethics Board. I don't see anybody calling for his firing. And today in the Baton Rouge paper, The Advocate, a story and a picture of two police officers in blackface from many years ago, one of whom is still on the force. I don't know if anyone's going to call for their firing, but why is it news in Virginia and not news in Louisiana, Jim Brown?
I think it's what your motives are for the blackface. You know, in 2 weeks we have the biggest show, free show on earth, Mardi Gras, and the second largest crew in Mardi Gras is called Zulu. They march on Mardi Gras Day. They invite white members to be part of the Mardi Gras activities, the Zulu activities, but it's required by the African-American members that you wear blackface. You cannot be in Zulu if you don't wear blackface. You mentioned Pepe Bruno. I remember those days. I was Secretary of State in the 80s. They had something called the opera, I think is what they called it. It was a big performance at the end of the legislative session. And African-Americans like Reverend Alexander, who was head of the Black Caucus, put on whiteface, and other representatives who were white put on blackface. It was a joke, everybody making fun of each other. The African-American legislators brought up a big white robe to give to Pepe Bruno at the time, I remember. And everybody thought it was so funny, and they were laughing. And I think it comes down to intent. I mean, why, in this day and age, I think everybody is saying blackface is inappropriate. But if you go down the list of, I was looking over some of the entertainers over the list that went down, and you go down with people today, like Jimmy Kimmel, wore blackface. Dan Aykroyd, John Wayne, Mae West, Gene Wilder, the great comedian, Billy Crystal, Ted Danson, go on and on and on. And so, but I don't think their intentions were to mock or make fun of. It was a portrayal in some kind of a comedy scene or something along that line. So I think it comes down to intention. Why did you do it in the first place? And apparently in the legislature in the 80s, it was okay to do so. There were no editorials being written about it. There was no outrage. There were no groups. There were no black ministers who were screaming about it. It was just laughed off as something that where everybody could kind of drop down their differences and make fun of each other. And so anyway, it's a different time in which we live. You've got to be so politically correct, Jim. And I understand that in terms of issues involving women, of the Me Too movement. I understand the differences. It's a different time. But to go back and challenge someone on what they did 30, 40 years ago and don't look at their intentions, I think is making a mistake.
All right. Well, Monique in Mid-City says not many people were writing editorial columns about segregation in the 50s and 60s either. In the early 60s anyway, and so we change over time, but somebody should have been writing about it in the 50s and 60s, but they didn't. They didn't have the guts to do it.
John McKithen, who I think was one of the most progressive governors in this state, who did a lot for race relations, who did so much in developing the Mississippi River chemical plants. I remember his midnight ride up to the governor's mansion to tell Jimmy Davis there was an effort to unite the black vote for Chep Morrison. He's got to put a stop to it. And so McKithen evolved. He changed. And I think that it's a question of how far back do you go and what was the intention at the time? Should you forgive? Is there forgiveness in this country today? That's something that is a good discussion of the program. At how far back do you go and at what point do you say, hey, we forgive you? Can you change? And we've seen in Congress the West Virginia congressman who was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and then he went on to serve and apparently was forgiven.
Robert Byrd. Harry Truman was a member of the Klan, too.
Was Truman?
Yes, he was.
I didn't know that. I'm about 20th distant cousin to Harry Truman. You got me worried there now, Jim. So, but any event, it is a different world. We ought to be sensitive to it. But do we prejudge the times of 30, 40 years ago? And I think you've got to look at intentions.
All right. Ricky Causey says law enforcement goes over the top in many cases, just as they did during the Alton Sterling protests. That's what Ricky Causey writes.
By the way, those two police officers who were in blackface, according to Greg Ferris, who was chief of police at the time, they were on a job, a narcotic sting
working
job.
Working undercover. Yeah. But couldn't they find some black officers?
Well, I just don't know. I'm just telling
you. And believe me, I think a black person could recognize a white guy.
Shoe polish on his face,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, what an insult to the intelligence of the people.
Kind of wonder about the competence of the sting operation.
Well, Jim Brown, you're a big basketball guy. Jim was, by the way, the first recruit signed by Dean Smith at the University of North Carolina many moons ago. And tonight LSU has a big game.
Oh, I'm excited about it. By the way, it was Smith. I'm writing a book right now, Jim. Hope I can come on the show in 4 or 5 months and talk about it. But I wrote about Smith, and I said, yeah, I've got to be his most famous guy. I was the first recruit ever. There was some other guy that came along after me. I can't remember his name. Jordan, some guy, Michael Jordan, wasn't it? That should be in the mix, but nothing like me. So I am excited. Kentucky game, I've been watching LSU basketball for about 40 years, good times and bad times. I know sometimes it just got so bad I take a stack of newspapers and read, and the Advocate took a picture of me reading newspapers in my front row seat. And Coach Brown, Dale Brown, called me. He said, Jim, please don't do that. It just doesn't look like we've got a very good program out there. Please don't read your paper during our games. But in any event, exciting game tonight. LSU's on a run. They're going to go to the NCAA tournament. And basketball's never been a major sport like you see football in the state. But it's an exciting sport, and I hope that they're successful tonight. I hope it's a future flow of Coach Wade and a new time in LSU. I'm excited about it.
And when does your book come out?
Well, writing about some things we're talking about here on the show. It's the Odyssey, a Louisiana Odyssey. I'll make a confession to you right now. People who have some semblance of knowing who I am will say, well, Jim's from Faraday, Louisiana. I did not step foot in Louisiana until I was 22 years old. And I tell the story of how I got down here, and I talk about how the way of life in this state changed my life, influenced me, opened up my eyes to a lot of interesting things that I ended up doing. And so it's more a personal memoir is what it is, Jim.
We'll be back and spend a few more minutes with Jim Brown after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Coming in just a moment, we're going to hear from the remarkable writer Tom Clavin, who is back in a big way with a book about Wild Bill Hickok. But we're finishing up with Jim Brown, the longtime Louisiana Politico, who ran and won statewide office 5 times, and there is an election 8 months from today. And right now it's for the governor's election. It's John Bel Edwards against Ralph Abraham and Eddie Rasponi, who's been rather quiet considering he's supposedly sitting on about $5 million. At what point does he pull the trigger, and at what point do we really have a race?
I think he's got some of both candidates are raising money. That both the challengers to John Bel Edwards are raising money and making some peripheral meetings, nothing as intently as you would see in the past. I think, Jim, is going to come down to their approach is that before you vote for them, for Rasponi or for the congressman, you've got to tell voters they're the alternative. You've got to go after John Bel Edwards. And I don't like the fact it's going to happen. It's going to be a very negative campaign, and it's going to be a referendum on Governor Edwards. Should he have gone ahead with the Medicaid expansion? Should he have taken on other programs? Is the economy doing all it should be? They're going to beat up him pretty well, and then in the last month say, okay, now what's the alternative? It's me. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of image development on either candidate until I think the issue is going to be yes or no on John Bel Edwards. Then if you say no, who's the alternative? And they're going to fight it out between Rasponi and from the congressman. So will someone else get in the race? I just don't see another major candidate getting the race this time. So I think that they feel if they get in a runoff with Edwards, they can win, which will get in. And will they do what happened 4 years ago where the two challengers turn on each other, as Vitter did, taking on Jay Darden and taking on several of the candidates in that race. Yeah. And then they kind of self-destructed. So it'll be interesting to see how the strategy plays out. It's kind of a slow dance right now, Jim, in terms of who's going to fight. You know, they're pairing like boxers, just not going after each other quite yet. But it'll explode here in a few months.
Well, thank you, Jim Brown. Let's talk again soon. We're eager to read your book.
Look forward to it.